Two, parenting with a vision. Just so if you're not where you thought you, in a class that you thought you were in, you can go find the right class. For those of you who weren't here Tuesday, my name is Jonette Blakeney, and I am a mother of three, and I have a master's degree in social work, and so my professional background is mostly doing counseling with children and families. I also have spent some time leading grief groups. I have an interest in grief and death and dying, so that's an area that I've spent time in also. And let's see if there's anything. The last 10 years I've been a stay-at-home mother, mostly. I'm the director of Sunday school at our church, but feel strongly that I see my parenting as a vocational call, and have tried to do my best to treat it as such these last 10 years. But I have felt blessed that I've been able to do a job that I've felt called to do and want to be doing. And I think that that's a pretty luxurious spot in life. This fly. Bother someone else. I like to know a little bit about who I'm talking to. And again, like we didn't on Tuesday, we won't go from person to person. But just with the show of hands, I'm assuming most of you are parents or have parents. And that's, is that, if you're a parent, you're all parents? Okay. How many of you still are in relationship with your own parents? Are they still alive or not alive is the question. Or some of you may have severed relationships for other reasons.
No, everything's fine.
Oh, okay. Okay. So most of you. Or no, do that one more time because I got distracted. How many of you still have parents that you are in relationship with? Okay. Okay. And how many children do people have? You can show. Okay. And have anybody with adopted children here? Okay.
I didn't adopt them, but they are adopted by my husband.
Oh, right. Okay. How many, any of you have stepchildren? I have a stepchild also. This is a sadder question, but I was wondering if anybody here has lost a child. Well, that's fortunate. That's good. But that can really add a component to how you parent and how you think about that relationship. I just want to do a quick review of Tuesday, just really quick. We talked about three things mostly, that we are, our relationship with our children is created in the image of God's relationship with us, and that when we read the Bible, we can actually find out a lot about our job as parents by reading about how God interacted with his people, with his or her people, I should say. I picture God, I want to be just that God as parent. I lost my father when I was 13. So I happen to really like the idea of God as Father. That's a comfort for me. But I really want to be very inclusive with language, and some of you may have some other images of God, which is wonderful, and I want to promote that. But so we talked about being made in the image of God, and that when we read the Bible, we can find out from God, you can really see that God knows our parental frustrations. You know, we read in the book of Isaiah when he's saying, you know, you people, you provoke me all day long. I call your name and nobody listens to me, and you do whatever you want. And, you know, in the Genesis story, we've read about how God says to when Cain was angry that God wasn't pleased with his offering. When Cain was angry, God actually comes to Cain and says, "Why are you angry? You know, you need to be careful because sin is lurking at your door, and you need to be careful what you do with that. So, of course, immediately Cain goes out and he kills his brother, which I think is parents. How many times have we said, now don't do that? And then immediately they do the exact same thing that we've just told them not to do. So he calls Cain back and it's, where's your brother? What have you done with him? Cain, well, I don't know. Cain, I don't know where he is. I'm not my brother's keeper. So it's just, I really enjoy reading those dialogues. And maybe that is something that you would also enjoy. Secondly, we talked about that children are a blessing and that they're beautiful Bible passages. When Sarah finds out she's with child, she begins, you've brought laughter to me in my old age. She names Isaac because it means laughter. Also that children have qualities that the Lord admires. Children can be role models for us. You know, unless you have faith like a child. Let the children come unto me, for theirs is the kingdom of God. It's not just that we're waiting for children to become adults. We can learn from them, and they are modeling to us qualities now that the Lord admires and holds up as examples for us. And then, fourthly, we talked about the fact that that the Bible reveals that, in fact, children are not your own. They're not your possession. They have been given to you as a gift from God, that they've been entrusted to your care. And how might that change the way we parent or think about our parent-child relationship? And I particularly love Psalm 139. And that's, you knit me together in my mother's womb. You knew me before, when I was in the dark places. I should memorize that one because I love it. I don't know why I haven't memorized that one. So anyway, we ask the question, Lord, what would you have me do with this child? So I'm asking that question not just from birth to 18, but even beyond 18. Lord, what would you have me do in this relationship? So let's just start, first of all, today, talking about what are our roles as parents. What hats do you wear? What are our jobs as parents? Young children or older children, what are our jobs?
To teach.
Teach.
Support. Model. Love. Food, shelter, clothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, provide.
Guard.
Oh, provide. That's a good word. I'll use provide as food, clothing, shelter.
Guard.
Guard.
Good.
Nurture.
Challenge.
Educate.
Expose.
That would be the word that I spelled wrong.
We have spelling issues here.
Okay.
Playing with.
I'm going to talk about this later, and I think that I used the word interpret, and I think maybe expose them to the world. Is that what decide how much and when they see of what? Okay. What is there something else?
Play.
Yeah.
Encourage.
What else do we do?
Listen.
Good.
Discipline.
Teaching. Yeah. A friend.
Be their friend.
Uh-huh. Comfort, if that's all.
Yeah.
Comfort. I think finally let go.
Yeah.
Have fun.
Good.
Okay. So, I mean, we wear a lot of hats as parents. the other thing, let's see, there was something that, oh, what about thing, and I food, clothing, shelter, this does come, but I, right under this heading, but I just want to, we spend a lot of time providing, cooking, driving, cleaning, all of those things that just go into their physical provision. Yeah. The other thing that I can't remember if it's up here is that we act as a mediator. If, particularly if there are siblings. Mediator, negotiator, referee. So let's see. I think that's good. I don't see any other. Do you think of something else that we don't have up there that's a biggie that would add to our discussion? And I should add, I really welcome input as you go. Hopefully, you know, if you're somebody that thinks and likes to get to say say something, and that will help your thinking process, then go ahead and say something as we go. Okay, so now when, you know, I look in the room and I see a big variety of ages here. During different times of our children's lives, we will spend more time in some of these roles than others. And we are going to, as individuals, enjoy some of those roles more than others. And I think that it's helpful as a parent to really to get to know yourself and to realize, I don't necessarily enjoy all of these, you know. And I am better at some of these than others. And so we can do a couple of things with that information. We can try to make sure that we aren't spending so much time in the areas that we're not that good at and don't enjoy. Some of it we can't help. But if we don't enjoy cooking and we don't enjoy driving them around, then that may be an area that, as a parent, you could try to problem solve some ways. Okay, maybe I will cook Monday and Wednesdays, and then I'll limit activities to this, that, and that, or I will carpool. I mean, you can make intentional effort to try to not, you know, strap yourself in a role that's taking up the majority of your time that you really don't enjoy that much. I'm not saying you can just get out of it. As parents, we need to stay in there with our kids and do what's required of us, but you also can be aware and creative. And also, sometimes we just get in the habit of being a disciplinarian, and we forget to have fun. We forget to play. And so we can check that, like, okay, I've been such a grouch this week, or why aren't I enjoying this very much, you know?
I oftentimes wrestle with the phenomena of having to find out what play will actually be happening. Like, for instance, my oldest boy loves to build Legos. I'm not a Lego guy,
yeah.
But I love to throw a football.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now, you know, sometimes he wants to do that, sometimes he doesn't. I'm not sure always to a certain degree how, whether or not it's okay to negotiate playtime with your child and finding out, well, you know what, I'm not really up on Legos, but, you know, maybe we can work out on something that we'll both enjoy.
I think that's great. Yeah, that goes on in our house all the time. Yeah, I'd love to be with you. Could we think of something else that we both enjoy doing? And then maybe there are those times when you just go, hey, do you want to play Legos? If you find yourself in a mood that you feel like you can tolerate Legos, then maybe you can be the one that approaches your child. Hey, I'm in the mood to play Legos. Should we go build some Legos? You know, try to find a time for that. And then, or you think you have patience, you think you can tolerate that for a little bit. And then you can work that in. But yeah, finding time together, certainly. Talk with your kids about how could we spend this time together? I'd love to be with you.
I'm sorry, I have one.
Yeah, other. Please, no.
I'm finding that at an older age now, I'm finding that there is an age of where the kids are wanting to have a little more separation, especially if they're a little bit more on the social end. Do you think it's something that perhaps one should press having the time with parents and saying, well, you know what, you've been with your friends a lot. Right now it's going to be family time. I suppose that that should sort of be the case, but you don't necessarily want to sort of insist on the time with your child if he begrudges the opportunity for peer influence.
Right, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but just briefly, I do believe that building in, I think that it's important as a parent to say, you've had, I mean, and to be reasonable about it, it will also be influenced by what your value is. I value time with my kids. I miss them when they're gone, and I also, even if I'm not missing them that much, I realize that, that they need to be back with me. But they also need their independence. And I think at the village here, we see this, oh, they could be busy all day. And then I see that their behavior is kind of deteriorating about around dinner, but they still want to go over to Joey's chalet. Could they go over there now and spend the night?
Yeah.
Like, no, I haven't seen you much today. You've had a big opportunity to be with your friends. I'd really like to be with you. And, or you could phrase it a different way of being with mom and dad sounds like a big bummer. It's like, you know, we need to be back together. And I think that that is actually helpful for them. It regroups, recenters, you know, kind of.
But yet they can't read your mind. So, you know, having some structure to that.
Yeah, instead of just saying, no, you can't spend the night. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Right, but verbalizing, I'd really like to be with you. Yeah.
And for instance, we've set up rules that, you know, they don't spend the night at somebody's house on a Saturday night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're going to get to those family rituals. Yeah, those are really important. I'm a big fan of, I mean, rituals is kind of a fancy word for just routine or, I think it's richer than just routine, but kind of the non-negotiables. This is what our family does. You know, this is how we spend time together. Back to the roles and how to do this is that I honestly don't know how people parent, and I mean parent even through their children's adulthood, without understanding some child development. Because we are all in process of growing, and when I was working with teenage moms, and they would say these things that their 6-week-old is crying to bug me, you know. They believe this. He hasn't cried all day, and he's just trying to bug me, and he's trying to get me to feed him. And I'm like, yeah. See, that's why it's screeching, you know. It is supposed to bug you, and you are supposed to feed him. But just no understanding at all that child didn't have any concept. It was no premeditative, you know, not trying to irritate the mom. But also then, but all the way through, what is your child's task in life right now? A lot of times we can get an insight into what kids, where they are developmentally by seeing what problems they're wrestling with. Are they having a lot of peer trouble? Or I mean, not even trouble so much as just challenges and curiosities and, or are they in their 20s and they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with their life? I mean, that's not just, oh, you know, he's 20 and he can't decide what to do. I mean, that's a real life, that's a developmental stage as much as being one or two and trying to potty train. I mean, that is a big deal. And we are all of us are in a development, we're developing, all of us still. It's like, what is our major task right now? So we need to find out about child development, human development, and that will give us a lot of insight into where our children are and what they need. Yeah.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. One of the things, there's a book called Daughters and Fathers, that maps a father's development, because we're developing.
Yeah, kids. Absolutely.
And if we have young children, well, we're in our 20s. We're having those developmental stages of our 20s while our kids are going through their latency age. So that's also another thing to think about when you're thinking about your child's development. Where am I in my life? And
right.
How
good.
Is that connected with my child or not connected?
Great, good. That's wonderful. That's right. And that's part of, you have to know who you are and where you are and how that's interacting with who your child is and where your child is. And that's an excellent point and something that's very important. And you will, depending on how those two things match up, you will enjoy stages, some stages better than others. And that's okay. That doesn't mean you're a bad parent. That doesn't mean you can't, you know, you're not adaptable. That says something about who you are and something about who your child is. Because if you have more than one child, maybe you really enjoyed Sarah's fifth year, but Johnny's fifth year was just like, ugh, you know, because you were at a different stage also and they were different people. So that it's very individual. I heard a woman in her 60s recently, we were talking about parenting, and she described that she had a close relationship with her adult children. She had had struggles throughout their growing up years, but she was pleased that they had now come into adulthood, and mostly they were okay, and she was still close to them. And I was struck because she said, you know, I've been thinking about my job as a parent a lot lately. And I said, oh, you have? What? You know, even though they don't live with you? Yeah. She said, no, I have two really important things left to do for my children. I need to role model aging and dying gracefully for them. And I thought, wow. I mean, I was really struck that she had spent that much time. She had not let go of her identity as mother. She was just there for her kids and still thinking about how to role model for them. And I thought that was just wonderful.
Yeah, it is.
So anyway, there's all kinds of different ways to do all these things. Okay, so when we look at these, teach, support, love, provide, play, every single one of us in the room, we will read those words and we would carry these things out differently. So that's kind of where the deliberate comes in. Some of this stuff is going to come really naturally, and some of that stuff that comes naturally is going to be really good for your child. Some of the stuff that comes naturally, after a while, you might say, oh, maybe I need to adjust that a little bit. But parenting is, it's unique to you, to your child, to each child, and then a lot of it is just, well, not a lot, but there's trial and error. You know, we can always change and adjust and look for feedback. I want to talk about some of the, how do we decide how we're going to go about these things? Okay. I feel like parents are, there are some unique things about parents that you have to keep in mind when you are deciding how you will do these things. First of all, parents define the value system. What is this family going to value? How much time are we going to spend together? How much money are we going to spend on various things? How will we educate our child? How will we discipline our child? How will we communicate with our child? I mean, we really, the values, you and your parenting partner, if you have one, you are the people that are going to define the family value system. Also, parents have a broader, they have the big picture. They have the broad perspective. I'm concerned when I see children who are treated as peers. And by that, I don't mean treated respectfully. I love the idea of treating children respectfully. Of course you must treat children respectfully, but they are not your peers, and it is a big mistake and disservice to them to treat them as a peer. And they do not have a broad vision. They don't know the world like you know the world. So here you, I'm not sure who said expose, but you know, it's your job to give them the broader perspective as they go along and give them information as they need. And this is my value coming out. I was heartsick when that little 7-year-old girl died in a plane accident. Do you remember that, the pilot?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and her mom was like, oh, but she wanted to. She died happy. Like, your 7-year-old didn't want her life to end. I mean, she had no concept. I mean, the 7-year-old doesn't...
I don't know what happened.
Oh, there was a 7-year-old. This was a few years ago, but it just struck with me. She wanted to be a pilot, the 7-year-old.
Oh, and she soloed.
And she soloed, and she crashed and died. And I just... And her mom's comment was that, you know, well, it's okay because this is really what her child wanted to do, and she died happy. She died doing what she wanted to do. And I thought, no, I don't think your 7-year-old really had what it took to weigh out the balance. And your 7-year-old trusts you. If you say it's okay to go pilot a plane, they will believe you. You know, and I just, I thought that was a real tragedy. I just, but even on a smaller scale level, well, he doesn't want to go to church, you know. Well, he's 5. Of course he doesn't want to go to church.
Yeah, that's the right definition.
Is he going to go to church or not? I mean, that's your job to say whether he's going to go to church or not. Now, some things are negotiable, and you have to decide where are your non-negotiables as parents. You know, and even sometimes what you think your non-negotiable is, it becomes a negotiable. For instance, I was talking with a pastor and his family last week, and the non-negotiable was that you go to Sunday school and you go to church, and that you have meaningful conversation during dinner. So, and his daughter was laughing. He said, yeah, do you remember that night that our meaningful conversation was getting up on our chairs and feeling how much hotter the air was at the ceiling? But, you know, she's 27 now, and she remembers that. That was meaningful. You know, she giggles about it now. Yeah. And then when she was a senior, then she just hated it. So then Sunday school became, okay, you don't need to go to Sunday school anymore. But church is, you still worship with the family. So it's not that we can never look at those things again.
Sure.
Yeah.
Another example of that, with smaller kids, I think it's more, those are like, seems like issues of control versus peer. I have a niece who, entering her adult years,
mm-hmm.
and her mother, my sister, is, I think, exposing her to too much of her own life.
Mm, right.
Where my niece has confided that, I really don't want to hear
what my mom is
doing with mm-hmm. those men.
Yeah.
Or, I don't want to hear all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my sister has launched into, oh, she's 18 now, I can tell her these things.
Right.
When there's still that role of mother-daughter.
And they don't want to be your peer either, do they? I mean, that was what she was saying. I don't want to know those things about my mother. I don't want to be her peer. And I think that that's right. And I think some of those things continue on through forever. I mean, the daughter could be 40 and she still doesn't want to hear certain things, you know, and that has to be negotiated as the two are, you know, in adulthood.
I'll never forget 10 years ago. I'm a nurse, and so people tell you things that you might not tell other people. And I was taking a walk with my dad, and he started confiding in me about prostate stuff. And it kind of went down from there. Boy, was I uncomfortable. If it had been anybody else in the world, I would have been...
Right. Oh, well, then this and that. You'll need to get that checked and tell them the procedure.
Although I can imagine some nurses would be able to say, well, all right, fine. I mean, this is the, you know, let's separate the dad from the body and just kind of be able to work.
Again, it's just a really individual thing,
and that has
to be negotiated. And when I'm using the word negotiate. And I don't mean actual verbal negotiation, like, okay, Dad, let's negotiate whether we're going to talk about your prostate or not. But we do that verbally and non-verbally. We sort of through what people are receptive to and what they're not, and we have to be respectful of that, because we kind of dance around each other until we figure out what's going to be comfortable and what's not. And other people just, you know, say, you know, I'm not comfortable with that, or I am comfortable with that. And then, you know, what's hard, are any of you caretaking a parent? I mean, taking care of a parent? You are. Okay. So then what happens when you are changing the bed, helping them use the bedpan, giving them the medicine? I mean, we are, and I don't know if that's where you are now, but I had a friend who recently lost a father, and near the end of his life, she was doing all of the caretaking things for him like he had done for her. And that, you do that, and it's not comfortable, but you do it because you love that person.
Seems like, too, that would be, perhaps your parent gets to a place where they can't really talk, and how important it would be for you to listen for cues, because it might be that you need to call someone in. I mean, your parent might not be comfortable
either, right? Either. Yeah, that's a good thing to be sensitive about. Now, then let's see, where are we? Okay, things that parents, the unique position parents are in. Okay, so you define the family value system, that you have the broader perspective, and that parents, and we kind of got into this a little bit, but parents interpret the world for their children, all the way from little, like, you know, the way we interpret, don't go in the street, it's dangerous, to messages about people that are different from us. I mean, what kind of language are we, how are we interpreting diversity to them in the world? Or even our attitudes. Is everything, you know, is life unfair? You know, do you come home and your language about getting, you know, what happened at your work, what happened in traffic, what happened at the store, this is so unfair, I got cut off, or is it that, you know, life is full of aggravations and surprises, delightful and frustrating? You know, how are you going to interpret the world? What language do you use? And I'm actually horrible in traffic, and I just, the word idiot pops out of my mouth, and I just can't believe it's popped out. And my kids will hear it, and he's like, "That was that guy an idiot, Mom?" So I don't know. Not really. No, he just came a little closer to me than I thought he should. That's all. You know. So we.
I have to share a funny little story that happened once when our daughter was, I don't know, early teens or late. Anyway. She said, "Dad, you sure have a lot of pals."
A lot of what?
A lot of buddies.
Pals, uh-huh.
I go, "Oh," I thought, what a nice thought she has, yeah. The perception. So, "Oh, that's a nice story." She goes, "Yeah, when you're driving, you go, watch out, buddy."
I'm going to have to switch. I'm going to replace my horrible world with word with pal. That will be a bunch of pal. Is that your friend? Yes, honey.
You're just surprised to see him.
Where did he come from? but your beliefs about the world will come through in your language, as he just, whether you think you're being noticed or not. And I think all of us can remember times when our children repeated a phrase that we used, and it's like, oh, they were listening, you know. Like, you know, putting their bears in timeout, or, you know, doing something. But, you know. And some of it's flattering to us, and we're just like, oh, and then others of it is like, oh, my gosh. Now, some of...
Say something about our grandson puts his stuff in timeout.
Uh-huh.
And is that what... It's like, I kind of wonder when I watch that.
Yeah.
I'm often what our daughter does when...
I think my interpretation of that is just one. It's what also happens it's what happens in his world. But he's trying on the being in the power position, or he's trying on being what it's like to be the one with the control or the authority. And I think kids do that a lot. They try on identities in their play. And I think that, and sometimes they'll do things that you have never done, you know, and they're, again, they're just trying it on. Maybe they'll threaten their bear, and it's like, I've never done, oh gosh, where did that come from? I haven't, but they're just seeing what that feels like, you know. And I think that that's important for kids, too.
And I think at our little hourly care center, it's just not to punish as much as just calming down time, mm-hmm. a very yeah. short time.
Yeah.
But just to kind of pull
and,
away.
And the language you use about it, too, it can be a... not you're being punished and sent into exile, but that, you know, hey, a couple minutes, like we put ourselves in a timeout. We might go to a quiet place, maybe not with them, but if we're kind of not liking a situation with a crowd of people, we'll go somewhere by ourselves automatically.
And yeah. Well, I was going to say, in our training, we're always to talk with them about why they're there.
Oh,
not
yeah.
just to put them there.
So it doesn't feel like a random punitive.
It is more of a terrible thing than it really is.
Yeah.
That we think they, you know, so, excuse me.
No, please. Yeah.
There's also a statement in relationship to timeout of where it's timeout should last 1 minute in relationship to
their age.
Mm-hmm. The years of age.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with that?
I think that generally works pretty well. I think that's a good rule of thumb. I also think that some kids are going to respond well to timeout and want more of it for themselves. Like they'll be better at deciding timeout than you are, how much time they need. Some kids are like that. I shared with the group on Tuesday that one of my children, timeout was so punitive to her and so awful that I didn't use timeouts with her because it didn't matter what language I used. And I said Tuesday, she felt like she was being sent to Siberia. I mean, that was just so horrible. So I just didn't use it. I found other right. ways.
Sometimes you can be a little casual. Like for our house, we have the buzzword, you hit, you sit.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sorry, Dad. You know, okay, all right, I'll sit. You know, they just like, come on.
Well, good. Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah. I stumbled on something. My grandpa was in World War II, and he liberated a chair, apparently. That's how the story goes. From one of Hitler's favorite pubs. And we have this beautiful antique chair, and we've always called it the Hitler chair, which I never thought of, but it was just a descriptive thing. So the first time I was going to find a place to put my daughter for time, I said, go sit in the Hitler chair. Fortunately, she didn't know who Hitler was. And I don't use that word anymore. See when she's an adult in therapy, and my mom sent me to the Hitler chair. Maybe that's why she hates timeout. Gosh. Another important thing, and is that if you have more than one child, particularly, you are in a unique position that you love these children equally. Differently, perhaps, but equally. I mean, the way your love looks or feels might feel different to you, but you're devoted to each of them equally. So you have an opportunity to help them learn how to be in relationship with each other. So I think as a parent, and then if you have only one child, then I guess what I'm trying to get at is that you, as a parent, your job is to help them in relationship with their peers. But if you have more than one in the home and you are equally devoted to each, then you can really help them a long way down the road in terms of relationship. How do you get along? And you can rest fairly secure in the fact that you're equally devoted to each of, you know, to all of them, and that there's some equality and in the perspective you're presenting to all of the children. And again, I was struck by the Cain and Abel story. Mike Pellett was doing that on Monday. And just that the brother relationship there, and then also again in the prodigal son, where the one brother is mad at the other brother, you know, and at the end the dad says, and he says, he's not, you know, that son of yours, he doesn't even call him a brother, that son of yours took all the money and left and wasted it. And the dad brings back it around and says, your brother is home. And I was struck by that word, we need to celebrate that. And so some of the things that, like, for instance, if a child, is noticed or honored for something, or even something smaller, gets to go spend the night, or gets a special toy from grandma, or to help that child, and it's not always easy. And to even be in understanding with your child about the fact that it's not easy sometimes to watch another child get something that you don't, but learning how to be happy for that. Let's celebrate with, you know, Sarah, because she's been honored in this way. And I think that kids can truly learn to be happy for their siblings, and that we as parents can do a lot to mitigate feelings of envy and competition and those kinds of things. And then as Christian parents, we're called to honor each child as a unique creation, and ourselves, to honor ourselves and our children as unique creations. Also, we're called to pray for our children. I think that praying for your children is perhaps one of the most important things you can do. And spending some time in prayer with, you know, on each of your children is really a powerful exercise, because it calls them up into your mind. It makes you think about them and have you look at them. And prayer is powerful in that we become open to things that maybe we want to be closed to. And one of the sessions last week, they were talking about prayer, and he was talking about praying and how that person feels something from it directly. And I was thinking, gosh, there are people I intentionally don't pray for just because I know I'm going to feel better about them if I do. And not my children, but people, you know, a neighbor or something that I don't want to feel better about them. So I just don't pray about. So, I mean, the Lord knows that if we pray, we will, our hearts will be open. And
we have family praying at the end of the day, and it's at some, in some situations, I think, well, in most situations, certainly here, because in any particular conflict that a parent has with their child, most of the rest of the family knows about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But the situation is in when the family's praying together, oftentimes you can ask God to be able to help your conflict with this child.
Yeah.
As they're all sitting there, to a certain degree, it brings everything out on the table, and mm-hmm. also asks God to be able to help in something that perhaps the parent and child really have no control over.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, it kind of puts everything to rest, certainly before you go to bed. And
yeah.
usually in the morning, then you, you're walking around with a few more marbles anyway.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you for saying that, because that is, family prayer time can be a really meaningful, powerful time. And ending the day together in prayer, whether it's all together or one-on-one with a child, can be really wonderful. And also can be, when I pray with my kids, I always wondered if this was cheating, but I do a little like parent. It's like, please help Hunter. No, but I will pray for something that I think that he's struggling with, and I will also include in it what I need help with,
yeah.
what I'm asking for help with in this struggle. And I think that really says we can bring this to the Lord. You know, this may be bigger than us, but we can bring it to the Lord.
And soon they're going to be praying for you out loud.
Yeah.
Please help
them. Hey, I'd appreciate that. That'd be great.
The other wonderful thing about it is the children revealing these insights during prayer.
Yeah.
It's so amazing to me sometimes what they pray about and what they've noticed.
Isn't that neat?
It's a real instructive thing for me.
And it is, because then you get this glimpse into there, because they know you can hear, but at the same time they're directing the prayer to God. And so you do get to see this glimpse as if they're, you know, a kind of a snippet of the conversation they're having with God. You know, it's. But I would just ask you to truly commit, if you haven't already, commit yourselves to praying for each of your child every single day. It will make a difference in your life, and it will make a difference in their life. I remember the day as an adult where I became completely aware of the fact that the prayers my mother has offered up for me every single day have made a difference for me. I don't know, I'll never know all in what ways, but I just believe that they have, and I'm very thankful for that. The other thing that I would invite you to do is if somebody has lost parents, maybe adult friends, that praying for that person every day. That is just a very powerful thing to do. And if you feel at some time that you can share that with them, then you can. And that's, one more thing I want to say. In prayer and family prayer, if you do the God Bless Mommy and Daddy and Grandma and Grandpa and this and that, it helps build relationships. Aunts and uncles that live far away, those kids feel that they're in relationship with that aunt and uncle because they hear that name repeated every single day. So, okay, let's, with this in mind, let's see, what time is it? We have about 15 more minutes. Let's talk about then kind of some of the biggies of relationships. Communication, discipline, family, rituals. What I would suggest, and I'm hoping that all of us will agree with this, is that the way we communicate and the way we discipline should be based on love and respect in our families. And I'm just going to say that that is what is emotionally healthy, and that what I would suggest, I don't think anybody would argue, so I'm going to make that assumption. So what does respect look like? How do you know when somebody respects you, that you're being treated with respect?
They listen to what you have to say.
They listen, yeah.
Considering their feelings.
They consider your feelings.
Giving people a chance to vent, you know.
Mm-hmm. So listening without judgment or defensiveness, that they can vent their feelings without there being recourse, is...
Yeah, you can think about that a little bit more.
Okay.
Well, it's... I guess to me it's... when you do have a problem, you don't go on the attack. You're considerate, and you approach it in a constructive fashion.
Mm-hmm. And communication is really twofold. We listen and we express. You know, we are either listening or expressing or both at the same time. And those things, there are ways to do those things in a way that fosters love and respect, and ways to do those things that actually deteriorate love and respect, or where love and respect is completely absent. And I know that probably all of you have been given active listening instructions to death, but really good listening, you know, the buzzword for being a good listener has become active listening, you know, it's become kind of a woven into the our community, the joke about what I hear you saying is, and you know, what you're feeling is. But you know what? There is so much power in that concept. And it is easy to trivialize it, but there is so much power in good listening. When I was working with families in crisis, and if their parenting didn't change, their children were going to be placed in in-state placement. I went in for training. I thought, okay, I'm going to get they're going to give me the big guns now. Boy, this is really going. They're going to teach me now. And then I sat through like 4 hours, you know, and this is after my master's degree in social work, which followed my bachelor's degree in social work, and, you know, I knew active listening, right? So that the whole session was on listening again. And it was, I have to tell you, in those homes, that's the diffuser. That is what diffuses things. That's what opens avenues up. Listening is a powerful tool. And I can't express that enough or emphasize that enough. So
the problems that you're running into in dysfunctional homes basically is that nobody's listening to each other.
Well, that could probably be a really good.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So listening. What are the principles of good listening? You remember that the other person is an individual. You don't know what they're going to say already. I don't care if your child is 3 or 30. If you listen, they may offer you something you don't know. And so if you're listening for that, you may get a really good piece of information that will help you help them. If you're going, my daughter came home from school, and she was very concerned. She's a very compassionate person, but her class needed to, they were supposed to play with autistic children on the playground. And she was bothered by this, and I couldn't figure that out because Rebecca is so, open to. Well, then a few days later, she came back. She said, "Oh, Mom, we played with the autistic classroom, the kids today, and it was so much fun. But you know what? You know what their teacher said? You can't catch autism." Oh. Well, I was so busy saying, "Oh, honey, kids of all, abilities, disabilities, you need to be their friend, blah, 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 blah." I was doing all this, da, 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 that I didn't listen for. She was worried she could catch it. And if I had maybe spent a little, so why are you feeling uncomfortable about that? Or what are the things? If I just asked a couple of questions that would have helped her express her feelings, I might have saved her and myself some, because I was like, "Oh my gosh, why is my daughter?" So we have to assume that they are unique, that they have some information that we can benefit from having. And when we listen, we can listen on two levels. We can, and this is sort of the classic male-female thing we were talking about in one of the sessions last week. You listen for feeling and content. Okay? You don't want to jump into, the reason I said male-female is that somebody had expressed last week that it was this kind of male tendency, so to speak, to jump in and problem solve. So that's the listen for content. And then a more stereotypical female response is listen for feeling. But you actually need to combine those two if at all possible. Listen for feeling and content. And then ask some questions. So then when we are expressing ourselves, when we're talking about our own feelings, using respectful language that talks about, things that start with when you do this, you make me feel this way. I mean, these are really, you guys are, I don't want to gag you on this stuff that you've heard so much, but it feels so different when somebody says to you, "I felt really hurt when you wouldn't talk to me when I picked you up from school today. When you act like you didn't know me, that hurt my feelings." Instead of, when I pick you, and it doesn't even have to be angry. Okay, let me get the angry tone out. You always ignore me when I pick you up from school. This is the reverse. And you make me feel, angry. Okay, this person is being accused immediately. They're being told they always do something, which may or may not be true. And you've jumped straight to anger instead of hurt. When you're expressing yourselves, remember the whole continuum of emotions. We don't go from nothing to anger. There's all of these other feelings in between. And if you can have a large emotional repertoire of words, and then you will be able to express yourself more accurately.
I heard a good hint, along with "when you," which starts out accusing, or if you start off with "why."
Yeah.
Because "why" makes the child come up. Oftentimes, I have a little kid, they don't know.
They don't know why.
They don't really know why. That's kind of, I'm not going to get a response to, "why did you do that?" But if I can talk about what I observed, mm-hmm. it's different.
Yeah, that's true.
But why? And
why did you do that?
Or
the all or nothing thing, the exaggerating.
When you or why? Or you always.
Oh gosh, we only have a couple minutes left, but I wanted to get to Well, anyway, in the discipline part, you need to ask yourself, what's the relationship going to be between my rules and the relationship? Michael Pellett talked about that in Prodigal Son Bible study, and I thought that was great. Is the relationship here ever going to be called into question because they've broken the rules? And what purpose are the rules going to serve? Like, we were given the Ten Commandments. Those were not hoops to jump through. This was God's vision of, I mean, he gave us a vision. I know what you will need to do in order to live in community with people and with me. And if you do these things, you will be happy. You will live in communities of love and respect. And so just think about, what purpose are rules going to serve in and what relationship are they going to have to the relationship? Does that make sense? Now I'm trying to abbreviate because I'm running out of time. So, and then, and disciplining, having a big toolbox for discipline so that you can pull out of there for different children at different times what's going to work. Is timeout going to be used? Am I going to ignore this behavior? Is there something I can teach here? What can I teach here? What can I learn here about my child's limits? You know, to take your child out shopping all day and then to be really upset that they can't sit in their stroller for 5 hours, well, you know, that's just, so question, what are my expectations, you know? And then the family rituals, build in those family times together. Whether it's at the end of the day, whether it's, you know, your 3 times a year that you travel to visit with your children who are grown. But family dinners. And even maybe a less, maybe not, maybe it won't always be cut and dry, but maybe some things will, like not spending the night on a Saturday night. Maybe not usually 2 nights in a row. I know some parents that their kid leaves on a Friday night and they just keep calling for an extension. And if it's summertime, that kid could still be there 4 days later. You know, it's like, well, don't you miss Anna? I mean, don't you want her to come home? So anyway, and let them know that it's important to you to be with them. And then the other thing that I would say, oh, look at that. I had pages left, you guys. Well, actually, probably some of you have kids to pick up from Narnia, and it's lunch. But I just want to also encourage you to include the past in your vision. And that is, where did your children come from? Let them know that they've come from a long line of people. And who are those people? And foster relationships with aunts and uncles and grandparents, and talk about their great-grandparents, and give them a sense of history that's so rich for kids, you know, that just grounds them down. Not grinds them down, but grounds them. They know who they are. They know whose they are. And there's a great book in the bookstore, Grandmother's Song, that I just read, and it's just beautiful. So I would encourage you to read this. Buy it if you like it. Okay.
I have to say one thing. My mother just passed away about a month ago, but we found all these letters that my grandmother had written and received.
Oh,
and even,
neat.
You know, your adult children want to know all that information, too.
They do.
It was so fascinating. I just felt so much more connected to all my
You family. Do, don't you? It just gives you the sense of connection. And we all want to belong. We all want to belong. And also in terms of nurturing your child's self-esteem, remind them every day that God loves them. God will always love you. God's love for you is bigger than my love for you, if you can imagine that. And also remember that your love is their first experience with God. So they are experiencing God's love when they're experiencing your love. That can be powerful for kids when they're alone and they and you're not there and they know they have God's love, and that can be wonderful. Well, We didn't get to everything.
When's your next session?
Hey, I'm done teaching tomorrow. Yeah, I taught Tuesday and Thursday, and that's it. To let you in on a little secret, I didn't know I was teaching this week. We were guests and last week, and they some people, for some kind of sad reasons, weren't able to come up, and so they asked if I could plug in, and I had a great time, and thank you for, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I wanted to say one more thing as Christian parents. Reread the promises you made at your child's baptism. And in Christian love, you have presented these children for holy baptism. You should therefore faithfully bring them to the services of God's house. Teach them the Lord's Prayer, the Creed, the Ten Commandments. As they grow in years, you should place in their hands the Holy Scriptures and provide for their instruction in the Christian faith, that living in the covenant of their baptism and in communion with the church, they may lead godly lives until the day of Jesus Christ. And then it says, do you promise to fulfill these obligations? So if you have baptized children, you have made a promise to them that I like to remind myself of, and it's amazing what discussions can come up when you're in process of teaching these things to your children. So just wanted to put that in. Anyway,
thank you.
Thank you.